Golden Arrow Resources, a junior mining powerhouse with strong management, cash rich, and high quality properties with precious metals, gold, silver, and recently added copper for its demand and price rise. Golden Arrow has a proven five-step development strategy, previously responsible for three major discoveries with two in production. Golden Arrow Resources, U.S. trading symbol GARWF, and in Canada, GRG. Web address, goldenarrowresources.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor discussing with Joseph Uhmeier a phenomenon that we're witnessing in several states in the continent of South America, in Chile and perhaps in Ecuador and certainly perhaps in Colombia. Indigenous groups, what I believe in America we call natives, Native Americans. In Australia there is the word aborigine, but indigenous groups protesting for their rights. At the same time, there is vulnerability by the democratic process, both in the streets and in the polling. We go now to a state, Peru, where the presidential election is decided, and it was decided in a very close election. My statistics say 17.5 million votes cast, 44,000 the difference. The man's name is Pedro Castillo. He represents not only indigenous groups, but poor people or people of limited means in parts of the country that have not enjoyed the riches of the mining and development in the large cities. Peru, election was ended, settled. Castillo appointed a cabinet, the first iteration of which was dominated by romantic characters linked to the murderous Shining Path of the 20th century. But now there have been new appointments, some of whom are not Shining Path, but the question raised out of London, this is The Economist reporting, that they might not be competent for the five-year term. At the same time, Pedro Castillo is said to avoid the media, to avoid conversations, to have a deep distrust of Lima, his capital, of technocracy, of dealing with the major international interests, mining interests who come to him to talk about development going forward. And Mr. Castillo, President Castillo, is said to only be comfortable with his base, which is part of the indigenous story. So, Joseph, I come to you. The most surprising detail I learned about Pedro Castillo is a man during the campaign who denounced the palace in Lima as a colonial legacy that he was going to turn into a museum. The report is that he's living there very happily. Is Pedro Castillo overwhelmed by his duties? Does he have a vision that he's restating to the people? Or is this a work in progress, Joseph?
It's a work in progress, but let me give you some context, John. When President Castillo was inaugurated at the end of July, he immediately faced a major challenge from the establishment and the elites in Peru, what many call in Peru the caviars, the los caviares. And what they realized was they made a mistake. A lot of them actually didn't oppose Castillo as much as they opposed Keiko Fujimori, who was the other presidential candidate at the time. But when they saw his appointment of the cabinet, and remember, there was two individuals specifically, there was others, but there was two in specific that were radical leftists. I mean, not just, you know, your moderate democratic socialist left, but they were radical leftists that had actually belonged to terrorist groups or had been sympathetic to terrorist groups in the past. And so that freaked out the establishment elites inside Peru, and they began to go to war with President Castillo. So what happens with President Castillo does is he essentially decides to shake up his cabinet, and he's done it twice already, and appoint different people. But the problem is that even though he shakes up his cabinet, at the end of the day, his policies pretty much remain the same, at least up until now. His cabinet is made up, it's probably the most leftist cabinet that Peru's ever had. And it ranges from radical left, as the former prime minister was, Guido Bellido, to maybe perhaps, I wouldn't call it moderate left, but at least not as radical as some of the other members, so much as their economic minister. So on the economic side, he's essentially becoming a bit more tempered, and I think that's reflecting on how he's trying to work within the markets. But on the security and on the political side, he's still tapping into a base of support, which is radical. And perhaps the new ministers, like Martha Vasquez, the new prime minister, is not as radical as Guido Bellido, but they still have the same ideology, the same political sympathies, and essentially are proposing the same policies. And what I think, John, is the influence for President Castillo's political makeup of how he's going to be governing Peru is coming from Bolivia. It's coming from Evo Morales in Bolivia, who did something very similar. He kept the economics somewhat moderate left, but everything else he kept very radical, including political persecution, which we're seeing right now in the new Luis Arce government in Bolivia. I think Pedro Castillo is following the Bolivia model.
And where is that going, Joseph? What is the vision that Morales has, or that Morales and Maduro have? Is it to unseat democracy? Is that the whole vision, or is there some other blending of their – because these are strong men. I don't see them spending a lot of time together on vacations. But so what is their – what is their direction? Are they working at the behest of an outside actor? We know that there are major capitals involved in conversations. Moscow, Tehran, Beijing. Is that the driver?
So I think the overall end game here, the overall goal, is to essentially remake both the geopolitical and the geographic map of Latin America, to essentially push out United States, to make the United States non-consequential and not influential in Latin America and the Caribbean, and replace them with those capitals that you mentioned, Beijing, Tehran, and Moscow. Russia, China, and Iran have gained tremendous amount of influence with Morales in Bolivia or Maduro in Venezuela or Ortega in Nicaragua. But the end game still remains the same. The end game is to essentially redraw the geopolitical and geographic map, establish new trade routes, connect those trade routes to the Belt and Road Initiative of China, and allow all these external actors to control the region while the United States has to retreat back into our own territory. That's the goal.
Pedro Castillo has a 5-year term. Joseph, I understand that London has a point of view, and it's not ours. But from this lengthy article, because The Economist gave him a great deal of attention during the election and afterwards, there were questions about whether his election was legitimate. They've paid a deal of attention to Castillo. The suggestion here is that he might not last, that his will-of-the-wisp rule so far, his aversion to Lima, to business people, to the market, to technocracy, that's a quote, suggests that he doesn't want to be president, or he doesn't want this group grief. Is that possible, that he could walk away from the office or be replaced in some twist?
Well, it's certainly possible, John. I mean, the average lifespan of a president in Peru in the last half decade has been about a year. Remember, they had 4 presidents in 4 years prior to the election that happened this year that brought President Castillo to power. So it's certainly possible. And I think that's essentially probably the desired outcome of some of the establishment elites inside Lima, because they actually want to replace him with someone that's more moderate. However, I don't know if that's going to happen, at least not in the short term, because President Castillo, as I mentioned, he does have a political base in the country, and is mostly in the southern part of the country, which is connected to Bolivia and I think where Evo Morales is probably advising. Now, that said, even if he were to be replaced, if there was a shakeup, and I don't know how this would look, but essentially they would replace President Castillo, there's the chance that the next person could be worse. Remember, Vladimir Cerrón, who's the head of his political party, who's also convicted of corruption and is also currently under investigation, he could assume office, and he's probably the one that Evo Morales would want to be the president of the country anyway. So not just because I think that there's too much of a focus on an individual in these type of cases. Obviously, a president's a powerful position, but if we learn anything from Maduro in Venezuela and Evo in Bolivia and those, it's the power structure inside those countries isn't traditional to Western democracy. They spread it out through many different people and through different geographic territories. So even if President Castillo were to lose power or even to be replaced, that's not to say that things are going to improve inside Peru.
The Economist does hold out a happy ending, however, that Castillo, having campaigned as a radical, will turn into Ollanta Humala, a former president who did also campaign as a radical, and then turn to a mild social democratic government. That's a happy ending. Is that imaginable for you?
That's my hope. I think we all hope that President Castillo becomes more like President Humala, being somewhat realistic that he's never going to be perhaps, a very pro-market, pro-business president. But as you mentioned, John, President Ollanta Humala in Peru, he came in under the auspices of that he was close to Hugo Chavez, who was alive back then in Venezuela, and Fidel Castro of Cuba. But when he came into office, he actually didn't govern in that kind of radical manner. But that said, corruption increased tremendously under the Humala presidency, which kind of set the conditions for what we're seeing today. So yes, that could be a more positive outcome, but it's also an outcome that his political base is very cognizant of, and they've been very vocal, the political and social movements and indigenous movements in the southern part of the country, to say that Castillo cannot be another Humala, or will not be another Humala, and he has to listen to that base if he wants to maintain power in Peru.
I'm speaking with Joseph Umar, the executive director of Secure Free Society. We're doing continental thinking here. The disruption in the democratic process, the challenge to our understanding of markets compared to the top-down social democratic method of the 20th century. We're now going to go to Brazil, which is also undergoing a presidential election. And there are new charges directed at the president of the country, Bolsonaro. And Bolsonaro has chosen to campaign for his reelection in the poorest part of the country as well. What does that mean for the future of Brazil, a great and promising country that is now in the grips of political disorder? Joseph Umar, this is the New World Report. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.